Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host. It is February the 12th, 2016. And to those folks who will be listening to my program at Red State Talk Radio on Monday, it will actually be February the 15th. So at the risk of confusing everybody, I'm just thrilled that my program is being carried on Blog Talk Radio and on Red State Talk Radio. Because my mission, if you will, has been ever since 9/11 to wake up as many of my fellow Americans and our supposed leaders as possible to truly understand the significance of immigration, border security, and how the failures of those systems, the immigration system, of which, of course, the border is part of it, impacts everything. Everything from national security and public safety, criminal justice, public health, health care, education, the economy, the war on terror. Folks, you can't name a major challenge that this country faces or that our citizens face that likely is not being hammered severely by the failures of the immigration system. And that's the point to this program. While occasionally I do digress and go into other areas, I try not to be as somebody reached out to me and accused me of being a one-trick pony, which pleased me no end, but, you know, everyone's entitled to an opinion. Everybody has opinions, and everyone has backsides, so there. But, you know, this is not a one-trick pony deal. Immigration is a singular issue, not a single issue, because of the way it so profoundly affects all of us and so many of our challenges. You know, those of you familiar with my program, you know the deal. I'm a retired senior special agent with the INS. And so when I speak about immigration, this isn't a hypothetical deal. You know, I woke up this morning and I had a bright idea, and now I ran to the microphone, and here I am spewing foolishness. And in fact, you know, over the years when I've been on many television programs, and of late I've become something of a regular on a new Newsmax program, hosted by Dennis Michael Lynch, the documentary filmmaker. I've been in two of his documentaries. But, you know, when I've been on television programs in the past, I've had the host say to me, and Dennis didn't do that, but elsewhere it's happened over the years, what do you think about sending troops to Iraq or Afghanistan? Or what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And do I have opinions? Sure. But my belief, and it was something that was hammered into my head from the time I was 5 years old by my amazing parents, was that if you didn't know what you were talking about, you needed to close your mouth. My dad would give me what I used to call the father look, and I think we all know, or most of us know what that is if we were blessed to have good parents. My dad would look over the top of his eyeglasses, perhaps at the dinner table, and in that kind of a gruff voice, he was a tradesman, a construction worker, plumber, he'd say, "Mike, empty barrels make an awful lot of noise." And that was his way of saying, you don't know what the heck you're talking about, so zip your lips. And that's really my belief. So if I speak about an issue on my program or anybody else's program, be rest assured I will not spout nonsense. If I don't know what I'm talking about, if I can't substantiate what I say, I'm not going to say it. There's no point to it. There's far too much noise out there already, and noise doesn't get us anywhere. It just confuses the issue and makes conversation difficult, doesn't it? Everybody wants to be in a quiet environment. Well, we're not going to be that quiet, but I'm not going to make lots of noise so you have no idea what to believe in or what's real, what's not real. That's not what this program is about. That's not what I'm about. I'm about the facts. I'm about the truth. And, you know, as I look at the immigration issue and the way it's hitting the headlines now, think back 4 years ago, everybody was demanding that immigration be part of the presidential debates, and only one journalist had the integrity to ask one question about immigration. It's remarkable. And if you look at the polls that are out there, I mean, this is what's so astonishing. I receive emails from both political parties. I'm registered as a Democrat, full disclosure here. I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. I hate both political parties. They remind me of the Mexican drug cartels or the Colombian cartels, competing criminal organizations that will literally stop at nothing to control turf. They're even willing to witness Americans die. And I stand by that statement. And 9/11 is a great example of it. There have been other terrorist attacks. And those are examples of a willingness by our government to permit Americans to die in our own country so that they can continue to control turf and get those bribes, which is what campaign contributions are. We have kids and adults dying of heroin overdoses. We have a wide open border. Heroin doesn't come into the country legally. It's an illegal substance. We don't make it here. So every single gram of heroin, boys and girls, is clear evidence of a failure of border security. And how many times do we have to hear those commercials for a laxative for people suffering from opioid use? Yes, there are legitimate prescription drugs that contain opiates that are painkillers. They give it to cancer patients. They give it to post-surgery patients, people in an awful lot of pain. But opioids are at the basis of heroin. That's where it comes from, opium. And how bad the problem is. Opium is as cheap as dirt, yet the demand has never been higher. And anybody who studied economics, even in high school, knows how supply and demand works. If the demand is high, the price is usually equally high. But somehow, unbelievably, when narcotics is concerned, the demand is in the stratosphere, unbelievably so, and the price keeps falling. And there is only one way to explain that, folks. The supply is all but unlimited, and that can only happen if our borders are nothing more than a speed bump, which is why I have come to call DHS, the Department of Homeland, surrender. That's what we are facing. And for all the bluff and bluster about let's get the guns off the street, look, I don't want criminals to be walking around with firearms. As a federal agent, I was with the INS 30 years. Half of my career, I was with the Drug Task Force. I had a desk at the ATF. I had a desk at the FBI. I had a desk at DEA for nearly 15 years. I worked closely with members of the New York City Police Department. Believe it or not, immigration working hand in glove with police can be a force multiplier for the missions of both agencies, irrespective of what the liars that we elect to public office talk about. Oh, my God, if they enforce the immigration laws, there'll be no community policing. Quite the opposite happens. It's lie after lie. And we're going to talk about some of the whoppers they're telling this week. You'll be amazed. But the point is that if you really want to go after the guns, and I did, I was happy to take the guns off the street that we did. We took them away from convicted murderers. We took them away from drug traffickers. We took them away from the garbage that was out there, and we made sure that those guns could not be used to kill innocent victims. Unlike Operation Fast and Furious, which is a whole other story. Let's never forget what happened, how guns literally went south to Mexico. But the point that I'm going to make is that if this administration really gave a rat's tail about the safety of Americans, about the safety of American children, to listen to that Obama crocodile tear speech, goodness gracious, you want to go after the violence? I'll tell you what you do, Barack. Go after the gangs. Go after the narcotics. Most of the violence on the street has a nexus, whether it's direct or indirect, to narcotics and to the gangs. But what are we doing about it? Cutting loose criminal aliens, cutting loose gang members, and now you've got Bernie and Hillary. And I think Bernie is sincere. I got to tell you, I like the guy. He comes from my part of the world. He's a Brooklyn boy, just like Larry David, the guy that does a better job of being Bernie Sanders than Bernie Sanders. I actually went to junior high and high school with Larry David, believe it or not. We were in the same classes. He was a cut-up then, and he's gotten to be a bigger cut-up since, and he's found a way to make tons of money doing it, and I say good for him. So I think Bernie Sanders is legitimate. I think, for the most part, I might be wrong, maybe I'm being hoodwinked, I think he believes what he says. But I have to wonder about whether or not he really understands what he thinks he understands. There's a disproportionate involvement of minority kids in crime. That's why they're in prison. And the solution isn't to cut people loose. The solution isn't to release, as Obama calls it, nonviolent drug traffickers. It doesn't work. Drugs are behind the destructive side of our society. Kids that are high can't study. Kids that are addicted are focused on getting money at any cost, whether it's prostitution, whether it's petty crime, whether it's muggings, whether it's joining a gang. This is all fueled by drugs. There's nothing nonviolent about the result of what the drugs do to our society. We should be taking a good hard look at how we can fix our society, provide opportunities for kids that live in poverty, live in squalor, live among violent individuals, live in despair. You know, it's easy for the politicians who never got dirt under their fingernails, you know, to stick their nose up in the air like a damn periscope and say, oh, well, huh, you know, this is the way it is. No, it's not the way it is. These people wouldn't know the street if they were given a road map. And when we saw what happened in Baltimore, which was awful, and other cities, and you saw the violence, the politicians got into their limos, and they jumped out of the limos, and they made sure the camera crews were standing by, and they were filmed saying, we're going to do something about it. Nothing was done. Nothing was done. My mom used to say, talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. Nothing was done. We continue to import more foreign workers than the number of new jobs we're creating, and that's on the legal side of the equation. And when you look at the way that Obama has been legalizing hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens, creating a national security crisis, the Dreamers, no interviews, no field investigations, they could be as old as 31. I had a political type say to me, well, I thought the cutoff was 16. I said, no, these folks have to claim they came here by the time they were 16 or before. But they could be as old as 31 to make the claim. And if you come in illegally, there's no record of your entry. These people are using multiple false identities. How in the world do we even know who they are, why they're here? But what's also happening is they are getting the jobs. You know, we all experienced this when we were kids. You wanted to have spending money, you got a job. My first job was as a babysitter when I was 12 years old. And we had a two-family house, my parents did. I'm still in the house. No tenants anymore. But we had tenants, and I babysat for their children. And, of course, my mother was upstairs ready to help me out if I got in over my head with the two kids. But I was 12, and that's how I began to earn spending money. I washed and waxed my father's friend's car. I made a couple of more bucks. And then when I was 14, I got a job in a deli. I was washing dishes. I was waiting on tables. I was bussing tables. This little tiny kosher deli on the street corner 10 blocks from my house, not even 10 blocks from my house. And then I would deliver food to the beauty parlors where the women were having their hair done and they'd make a whole day of it. So they were ordering food and I'd bring them the food. They gave me tips and I was being paid by the store also. In fact, my English teacher one day showed up under one of those massive hair dryers and I freaked out. I was so used to seeing her in her pleated dresses. She was just such an amazing well put together young lady, the way she dressed. She was just meticulous. So to see her under a hairdryer wearing blue jeans and a sweatshirt freaked me out. I couldn't believe it was the same person. I almost felt like I had seen her naked. So I worked my tail off. And my friends all did the same thing. And by taking those beginning jobs, we had something of a resume that we could take each year to yet another employer and build a work record and move on. Those opportunities aren't there. And these bums out there, well, those kids don't want to work. They're lazy. Give them a job and treat them decently. Have you ever seen the way illegal aliens are treated by their employers for the most part? Not always. There's exceptions. But I can tell you I've raided factories. I've raided farms. I did all that before I went on and became part of the drug task force. In the beginning, everybody did that, made arrests of people at the workplace. And they were treated worse than slaves. I walked into sweatshops, which, of course, all went to Malaysia, China, and the other four corners of the planet. And there were places where if a woman wanted a job and her boss tapped her on the shoulder, she knew that for her lunch hour, she'd be having lunch with her boss, but there'd be no food involved. I mean, the stuff I saw made me sick. You wanted to beat some of these guys with a hammer. It made me so angry. How could you, as an employer, as a human being, do that to anybody? And what was so outrageous was everybody in the factory knew what was going on. So all the women knew what was happening to their friends, knew what was going to happen to them. Many of these were married women. They were very religious, but they knew if they wanted to keep that job, there was a little side to favor that they had to do the boss whenever he wanted it. I swear I have never in my life seen such degradation in my life. And now we're hearing about, oh, this is about compassion. Jeb, genius statement. Illegal immigration is about love. Hey, Jeb, you're looking for love in all the wrong places. I wish he had been with me on those damn factory raids where the women take you aside and say, look, this is an evil man that I work for, but I'm desperate. It's disgusting. And I've been writing about this, and you know my websites, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net. For years, I've been proud to write for a wonderful organization out in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. And I can tell you tomorrow, I'm going to wish I was there because they're predicting that here in New York City, the temperature will get very close to zero with the high wind alerts. I mean, this is going to be, they say when hell freezes over, I think it's going to freeze over tomorrow. So my great friends out in Santa Barbara, California, beautiful downtown, sunny part of the world, capsweb.org is their website. And in fact, I wrote an article for them recently, two articles, one about how interior enforcement of our immigration laws is the key, critical for national security. And I also wrote another article most recently for them. And the premise of my article is that, you know, we hear all this business about if we enforce the immigration laws, we're going to split up the families. I mean, the lies just keep on coming, you know. I heard Lindsey Graham, who knows nothing about immigration except probably where he gets his campaign contributions from the advocacy groups, said, well, we can't possibly deport the illegal aliens and their U.S. citizen children. The statement is outrageous. I don't know if he's as dumb as that or he's as comfortable with lying as that. I mean, it's just that simple. Which is it, Lindsey? Are you a liar or a fool? Of course we're not going to deport U.S. citizen children. And the issue about the 14th Amendment and whether or not birthright citizenship should continue has not been resolved. As of today, a child born in the United States, irrespective of the citizenship or immigration status of the parents, that child is an American citizen. And until that changes, it's going to continue on that way. And we cannot, under any circumstances, ever deport or exclude an American from the United States. In fact, when I went to Border Patrol Academy at the beginning of my career, there were two different words we used for what the inspectors did, because that's how I began my career as an inspector. And we were told that you inspect arriving non-immigrants, or arriving non-citizens, actually, which is what an alien is. And by the way, it's not political correctness to not use the word alien. It's Orwellian. There's nothing politically correct in that issue. Political correctness means you don't use the N-word, and I would never use the N-word. You can ask my kids. They've heard some pretty foul language when I get really angry, but you'll never hear me use the N-word. Because words that insult, that denigrate, think where that word comes from, that embarrasses, that's harmful to other human beings, is not part of Mike Cutler's vernacular. But there's nothing like that in the word alien. It simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. The problem with the word alien is clarity. And when you're a con artist, you look for ways of obfuscating the truth. You get the smoke machine out and you try to confuse people. So when I went to the academy, we were told, you inspect aliens and you examine U.S. citizens. May sound like a minor point, but it's a major point. The idea is that until you're convinced that a person seeking entry into the United States is a citizen, you're inspecting them. Because the burden of proof that they are admissible, that they won't violate the law, that sort of thing, is up to them. And it's a tough thing to do for us as inspectors. because it's almost like the Tom Cruise movie where you're worried about future crimes. What are your intentions in coming here? Do you intend to stay longer than we allow? Are you intending to work, you see? And, of course, under the Obama administration, it doesn't matter what you do, how you come here, what you do once you get here. Doesn't matter for most of the Congress, which is why the Republicans signed off on that omnibus bill. I call it the ominous bill. But once you, as an immigration inspector, and I'm sure the same is true today for CBP inspectors, Customs and Border Protection, once you are convinced that the person standing in front of you is a citizen of the United States, you absolutely have to let the person in. Now, the person may have an outstanding warrant. You may hold on to that person so that the FBI or DEA or the U.S. Marshals or the city or the state police can come and scoop them up. And I did that many times at Kennedy Airport. But you cannot say to an American, you're going back on that airplane. You can't do that. An American is always, always, always authorized to enter the United States of America. We cannot, under the law, keep them out. So if you have kids living with illegal alien parents, there's no reason to divide the family. Under the laws of most countries, folks, kids born to alien parents in the United States are dual nationals. They are citizens of their parents' countries, and they are citizens of the United States of America, and they could bounce back and forth between the two countries 49 times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year. They are free to come and go as they wish. They have to just go through the inspections process so that an inspector can determine that they are who they say they are, and they can go hopping and skipping back and forth across the border. That's not going to separate families. But it's the kind of lies that politicians like Lindsey Graham are good at. We hear this nonsense all the time. I had a politician or a political type, you know, a former chairman of a state GOP party, say to me, oh, we've done scientific polls, and the polls say that you can't win an election unless you're willing to allow the millions who are here to stay. I said, what made the poll scientific? And he had no answer. So I get these surveys in the email from both parties, and they ask things like, in this election cycle, what is the number one issue that concerns you? And you get the choice, threat of terrorism, the economy, education, crime, immigration. If you try to click off threat of terrorism and immigration, the computer won't let you. You have to pick only one. So most people say, okay, terrorism. Okay, there you go. Now, what happened to immigration? It's not being picked. Sometimes they ask you to put it in the order that most concerns you. If they do that, mostly it's just what's of greatest concern. And then they come back and they'll say, immigration came in 12th. Meanwhile, if you look at what the 9/11 Commission said, immigration, it was the failure of the immigration system that enabled the terrorists to enter the United States in the first place. And it was a failure of the immigration system that enabled them to stay in the United States, acquire identity documents, travel freely among us as they went about deadly plans. So what is the value of that so-called scientific survey? And then the company goes back to the politicians. They say to the politicians, well, immigration came in 12th. Immigration came in 6th. Whatever. Folks, this is madness. This is madness. And the Republicans are in a tizzy over Donald Trump. And, you know, I've been saying this for the longest time. And, no, I'm not throwing my support behind him yet. But I did make a point on the radio last week, and I will stand by it, that if tomorrow was Election Day, I'd probably vote for Donald Trump. Why? He was the guy that had the integrity and the guts to stand there and say immigration. All the others are trying to duck and dodge and hide. Okay? He didn't play games. And he explained why, about the rapists and about the violence being visited on the smuggled aliens and all that other stuff. Now, Trump is a very bright guy. He doesn't understand immigration the way I do. I'll be honest, I don't think too many people do, not because people are dumb, it's my life's work. When I go to my doctor, I hope he knows more about anatomy than I do. I'm sure Donald Trump knows lots more about business and banks and interest rates and that sort of thing than I will ever learn. We all have our area of expertise. This is mine. But I've said right along that a leader could step forward, explain why their position on an issue like immigration is pivotal, and win over the American voters. And you know what? That's exactly what Trump has done. Think about what he's done. So I wrote this article for capsweb.org, and my article, which was entitled Orders of Deportation or Orders of Removal, we used to call them Orders of Deportation, now it's Removal Proceedings, equal Orders of Protection for America. And here's the point that I was making. We all know that there are families out there that have real issues with a violent family member, with spousal abuse, with the husband who comes home drunk and beats up his wife, beats up the children, does these terrible things. We see these murder cases and these serious assault cases, and they're awful. And sometimes it could be the woman. It's not only the men. Let's be even-handed about this. You have people that are nuts. You have people that are prone to violence. And by the way, that's one of the categories for excluding an alien from the United States. It's not about race or religion. It's about aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Think of the Zika virus. We'll get to that. It's about people who are mentally ill and violent or sex offenders, criminals, spies, human rights violators, war criminals and terrorists, and aliens who would likely become a public charge or aliens who, if they worked, would be displacing Americans and or driving down the wages of workers similarly employed. But understand what we're trying to deal with here, because orders of protection for individuals, in my book, are similar to an order of deportation, order of removal. Because often a spouse will go to a judge, go to the police, and the police take them to the judge. We need an order of protection. A woman comes in, she's got a black eye, she's missing some teeth, her child is in the hospital. What happened? My husband went on a rampage last night, and he hit me with a broom, and then he beat up our child. The child's in the emergency room. So the judge issues an order of protection that says to this thug, you can't go back to the house and you have to stay a certain distance away from your family because you're a threat to their safety. That's an order of protection, and it makes perfect sense. And nobody ever says, what are you doing? Order of protection, you're splitting up the family. Yeah, the family wants to be split up because they don't want to be killed. They don't want to be beaten. Folks, when we remove aliens from the United States, especially if they have a history of violence and crime, these are orders of protection for America, Americans. And let's remember something. This is an order of protection for the members of the ethnic immigrant communities, whether they're here legally or illegally. People living in those immigrant communities are most at risk from the criminals. Because the criminal that's here in the United States has friends back home, wherever home is. This isn't just about Mexico. It's not just about Latin America. It's Russia. It's Asia. It's the Caribbean. It's Europe. It's the Middle East. You name it. Because, you see, human nature is human nature. It's not like if I look at someone and I say, oh, that guy has green eyes, so we know he's not a problem because people with green eyes are always fabulous. We all know that it doesn't work that way. Whether we talk about skin color, race, religion, ethnicity, curly hair, straight hair, no hair, you're born. People are people. Human nature is human nature. Every ethnic group, every race has the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so the criminals that can get into the United States prey on the people, make victims of the people that they live with. And who do they generally live with? People of the same ethnicity. And when they commit crime, very often they will take a witness aside and say, hey, Charlie, you go to the police. We know where your sister lives, whether the sister lives in Moscow, whether the sister lives in Beijing or Kingston, Jamaica or Guadalajara, Mexico. We know where your sister lives. We're going to visit her tomorrow if you go to the police. Or I have a suitcase. I want you to take this to my friend in Chicago. What's in the suitcase? Never mind what's in the suitcase. You're either taking the suitcase or you're not going to hear from your mother anymore. And we know where she lives back home. And this goes on regularly. And it goes on because we have criminal aliens operating within the borders of the United States of America, and not just the Mexican border. When I was assigned to DEA intelligence here in New York City, believe it or not, 60% of the people we were arresting up at the DEA Drug Task Force were identified as foreign-born. Pardon me. So look at the threat that this creates to the safety for people in the United States. And yet when we say we need to deport people, oh, you can't split up the families. Kasich said the same thing. Meanwhile, I wish Donald Trump knew this because there's an answer for Mr. Kasich and his naive approach. If an alien is living in the United States 10 years or more, has no criminal history, and has a resident alien or lawful or a U.S. citizen immediate family member who would be profoundly negatively impacted by the removal of that illegal alien, that alien, provided he or she has no criminal convictions, can apply for termination of removal proceedings. They get to stay here permanently. There are provisions for compassion under the law as it now exists. But the most compassionate thing across the board that we can do for America and Americans and immigrants is to deport people who should not be here. We're spending $13.9 billion a year on securing our borders over at CBP, Customs and Border Protection. The Border Patrol, we have over 20,000. The inspectors at ports of entry, more than 20,000. Altogether, nearly 60,000 when you include support personnel, the folks that run the computers, the people that run the detention facilities, and so on and so forth. So we have all these people, $13.9 billion a year, and we're told, whether it's by Bernie Sanders or Hillary, oh, if you come here illegally, it doesn't matter. Well, they don't even think it's illegal. They don't even think it's illegal. John Conyers said it's not illegal. I mean, the lunacy. There's a suspension of reality among the Democrats. And the Republicans take the attitude of, we've taken polls. I feel like Family Feud. Survey says, and the dishonesty from both political parties has gotten so severe. I want you to all think about the way that this whole story about the Zika virus has been going. A couple of weeks ago, out of nowhere, we hear about the Zika virus. It causes microcephalus, I believe is the way it's pronounced. Babies born with small brains. It's a devastating situation, devastating birth defect. These kids are, you know, what can I say? Major, major, major handicap. Disastrous. Disastrous. You would think everybody would be alarmed. And for the first few days, do you remember all these people in the white coats got on TV? Oh, the Zika virus is only transmitted by mosquitoes. Nothing to see here, folks. Keep moving. Don't worry, it's just about mosquitoes, and the mosquitoes don't go that far north. You may have a problem in Florida, you may have a problem, no, but it's only mosquitoes. Well, that sounds pretty reasonable. 3 days later, I believe it was, there's a news report, somebody in Houston contracted the Zika virus by having sex. And I was very blessed to be in Kansas. I was in Wichita, Kansas this week. My friend Lisa Ritchie, who arranged the event, asked me to come out. I spoke before a bunch of really great folks. Wherever I go, I got to tell you, I love being with our fellow Americans, no matter where they live, cities, farms, ranch. We're all Americans. And I made this point on stage and had everybody laughing pretty hard. And I wasn't trying to be funny, but I guess it is funny. You know, if you don't laugh, you cry. And I said, well, we're told that you can only get the Zika virus through sexual contact. And yet, miraculously, somebody came down with this disease in Texas, but it was through sexual contact. So the only thing I want to know is how in the world did this person manage to have sex with a mosquito? I'd like to see the photographs. May sound funny, but what's not funny is why were we being lied to? And now suddenly they're saying, well, we're doing studies. We want to find out how long can the virus live in sperm? How long can the virus live in saliva? So suddenly, and blood, right? So suddenly everybody understands, yeah, there can be human-to-human transfer. And in fact, the Zika virus was known at least a few years ago. In 2013, the Center for Disease Control talked about the Zika virus and the potential for sexual transmission. So why is it that immediately when they started to talk about the Zika virus 2 weeks ago or a week ago, oh, nothing to see here, folks, only mosquitoes. It's the same reason that when Ray Kelly was the commissioner of the New York City Police Department in 2010, and Ray Kelly's a bright guy. I met Kelly in the green room at Fox years ago. He had been the New York City Police Commissioner. He went from Commissioner of the NYPD to Commissioner of United States Customs. And then he came back to be the Commissioner for the NYPD again. He bounced back and forth. He was a member of the United States Marine Corps. No dummy. Certainly well-informed to have been the NYPD Commissioner, to have been the Customs Commissioner. Come on, folks. This guy's not, he's not a country bumpkin. And in 2010, if you remember, the Times Square bomber, Faisal Shahzad, came to the United States on a student visa at age 20 from Pakistan, tried to set off an SUV bomb in Times Square, crossroads of the world. Some guy spotted the smoke pouring out of the SUV. He got the police. The police got everybody out of the area. They evacuated, and they defused this thing before it, you know, detonated. It kind of fizzled more. It went fizzle instead of boom. Thank God. And they sentenced this guy to I don't know how many years in jail. And by the way, in the background, it was determined that he came on a student visa at age 20. He became a resident alien. We gave him a green card, alien registration card. Here's that word again, alien. Uh-oh. Alien registration card. The lawyers call them green cards. That used to be the nickname, the slang term. Why? Because they don't want you to remember that this is about aliens. Then they call them PERMs, P-E-R-M, permanent resident. Anything but alien registration receipt card, which is the official title. Let's strike the words from the language. This is Orwellian. Remember, 1984 newspeak. So he becomes a United States citizen and months later sets off the bomb. Now, under the immigration laws, anybody who seeks naturalization is supposed to undergo a good moral character investigation. We used to call them GMCs, good moral character. What kind of investigation do you really think they did where just months after getting citizenship, he tries to pull off a terrorist attack? The Tsarnaev brothers got political asylum. One of them was a naturalized citizen at the time of the Boston attack. So obviously the system is flawed. But to go back to Ray Kelly issued a statement that Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber who came here as a 20-year-old on a student visa from Pakistan, was a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. Can somebody please explain to me how somebody who comes to the United States as an adult, age 20, is homegrown? In whose home was he grown? Now, why is this being done? Why is it that when I've testified before congressional hearings, and I've done a bunch of them, and I've tried to draw that nexus between immigration and national security and terrorism, I've had members of Congress cut me off. No, Mr. Cutler, you can't say that. You better not say that. There's no nexus between immigration and national security. And, of course, I make them very angry because then I pull out my trusty copy of the 9/11 Commission report. And, you know, I'm quite familiar with it. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. And so let me just read something. I know I've read this in the past, but I think it's important to read to you today again because, you know, the headline this week, Clapper, the head of intelligence for the United States, said that ISIS is determined this year to come to the United States and carry out a deadly terrorist attack. So when you watch the video of Clapper making those statements, here's something I want you to hear. This is the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And this was an official government report. It's printed by the government printing office. It's available for free online, my favorite price, free. Or you can find it at my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org. I also write, I think I may have mentioned it. If I didn't, let me be clear, a front page magazine. I do a ton of writing for them. It is sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I'm very proud to be a columnist for David Horowitz. And so there, The Social Contract, I have an article in the winter edition about national security and sanctuary cities, how sanctuary cities are undermining our safety, our survival. In the summer edition, I had the lead report. It was something on the order of 27 pages, looking back 14 years at the 9/11 Commission and its findings and where we are today, 14 years after the attacks of 9/11. So anyway, that was The Social Contract. It's a quarterly online magazine. But so this is how the preface to the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel begins. Obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Then we get to page 47, and the report says, once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program after falsely claiming that he had picked beans in Florida. Mohammed Salome, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the Agriculture Worker Program, but was rejected. Ayad Mahmoud Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa. After he dropped out, he remained in the United States out of status. Then let's look at this beaut, and this one is on page 98 under immigration benefits. Again, 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. Think of the Dreamers, folks. Think of the way that Republicans and Democrats alike say, well, we're going to give them permission to stay and work. That's what we're talking about here, okay? As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, there it is, folks, or by applying for asylum after entering. Now, think about that. They warned about asylum, and then you look at the Tsarnaev brothers up in Boston. And then it goes on and says, in many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, execute an attack. And all we keep hearing about is, well, we've got to secure the Mexican border. How many congressional nimrods have you heard say that? First, we're going to secure the Mexican border. Because once we secure the Mexican border, because we can't deport 11 million, then we'll deal with the ones who are here. Do you realize that the numbers are so great, even if you think this is a good idea and I think it's disastrous, but what do you expect? It's a follow-on to the Reagan amnesty of 86, which was disastrous, and the Reagan amnesty also had a confidentiality clause, so as an immigration agent, under no circumstances, could I share an amnesty file with the FBI, even if the guy was about to set off 100 gazillion kiloton nuclear bomb in the middle of the country. You would have had to get an order from a federal judge before I could release the information, or I would be committing a felony. Reagan gave us that gift. George Bush and Michael Chertoff took illegal aliens and gave them, by executive order, privacy law protection. The privacy laws are only supposed to protect U.S. citizens and lawful immigrants. And I know, like, when I write articles for Front Page and I see the comments on the page by some people, oh, this guy is a bum, he's a registered Democrat, he hates the Republicans. No, I am telling the truth. But what Mr. Obama has done is absolutely the worst ever done to America, period. And Hillary and Bernie are running around basically telling us, hey, if you loved what Obama did, you're going to be in ecstasy over what we'll do, because we want executive orders up and down the line, and we want to let all the people come and stay, and we're not going to make any distinction between citizens or immigrants or undocumented. If you're here, everyone's treated the same, and we'll all sing Kumbaya into the sunset, which will be quite quick to follow, by the way, if these two nimrods get their way. I mean, this is insanity. We have a legal immigration system. We admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants every year, and that system lacks integrity. I just gave you two good examples, Faisal Shahzad and the Times Square bomber, and you heard what the 9/11 Commission staff report said. Incredibly, they're saying if you're here illegally, it doesn't matter. Yes, it does. You see, it's both parties. And when somebody gets partisan with me on this, I have a cow over it. This is not about left or right, but right or wrong. And I'm going to tell you, George Bush had a line after 9/11, and some people liked it, some people didn't like it. Well, I'm going to borrow it. You're either with us or you're against us. The us I am talking about are we the people. If you think it's appropriate to permit foreign workers to displace American workers, you are not with us at all, and I am not with you. If you believe it's appropriate to bring in more high-tech workers as we are firing Americans who have many years in those industries, huge amounts of experience, people who've done their job to perfection, and then we fire them in order that they train their replacements from India, I don't even want to know about you. I don't care if you're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. Folks, this isn't partisan. This is American. This is American. But we keep hearing the same lie. First, we're going to secure the border. No, no, no. And people say to me, well, should we at least start that way? No. If you're sitting in a boat in the middle of the lake and you got a bunch of holes in the bottom of the boat, how many holes do you have to plug and how many can you leave gaping open before you wind up at the bottom of the lake? The bottom line is, if you have 20 holes in the bottom of your boat and you plug 19 of them, you're going to go to the bottom of the lake. You can't say, let's first start. Let me give you an analogy. I was talking to Major General Valley, retired U.S. Army general. And I said, you know, I'm not a military guy, and I don't get involved with discussions about the military because it's outside my area of expertise. But I do know that the Air Force is dependent upon to provide close air support for ground forces. They don't send the ground forces in and say, well, in a couple of months, we'll send some bombers over. And they don't send the Air Force in and say, well, you guys are somehow going to hold territory, and maybe next year we'll see if we could send some soldiers in. It's carefully coordinated. That's how immigration needs to be done. I call it the enforcement tripod. You enforce the immigration laws at ports of entry. That's the job of the inspectors. Between ports of entry, that's the Border Patrol. But the third leg of that tripod, the immigration enforcement tripod, is interior enforcement. And by the way, Paul Valley told me that was a perfect analogy and that I was right. So when I hear this nonsense, well, first we're going to secure the border, run for your life, find a different candidate to support because you're being lied to. It's very simple. When someone says, first we're going to secure the border, the person saying it to you needs a nose job. Let me read something to you. This, again, comes from that 9/11 Commission staff report. And this one is Travel Tactics by Plot, Section 3.2. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. At airports. Not the Mexican border, at airports. Okay. In so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Many of these tactics had remained largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attack. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It remained largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. Simple as that. Interior enforcement. So when people say, well, Maybe we should start. No, we're not going to start anything. We are talking about a threat to the lives of Americans. Period. End of sentence. End of paragraph. Close the covers. It's over. You either do it or you don't. And if you don't, anticipate more Americans will die. I testified about visa fraud and immigration fraud on May 20th, 1997 at my first congressional hearing, 4.5 years before the attacks of 9/11, 4.5 years before. The Clinton administration did less than nothing. We had 9/11. I testified in March of 2002 about how two dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school as students in the United States. The whole world knew they were dead. The whole world knew they'd been terrorists. The promises made, the statements of outrage by the members of Congress. My God, you had to hear what they said. I was sitting at that hearing. I was one of the four witnesses. Not a single promise has been kept 14 years later. And now we're being told ISIS is headed this way. How wonderful. On February 11th, this is yesterday, I was on Dennis Michael Lynch's program with two other folks, and the topic was the remittances, the money being wired out of the United States, the lies being told about how we need to enact comprehensive reform, and now we're hearing about the economy's in trouble because of oil prices. Something remarkable happened yesterday. I was watching Lou Dobbs on with Bill O'Reilly. I've been on TV with both guys. I've been on with O'Reilly just a couple times. When Lou was at CNN, I was on his show at least 100 times. I was regularly on a weekly, if not daily basis, speaking with his reporters and his producers. Lou got it right. And he said to O'Reilly, it's not so much the struggling of the oil industry, certainly it contributes, but it's the fact that you have so many Americans unemployed, they can't buy anything, and that's what's killing the economy. And that's exactly what I've been saying. Lou is the first guy to say it. And, you know, O'Reilly said, well, they're saying it's a 4.9 unemployment rate. It's probably 10%. And I think Lou said it was like 30% or something even higher. And I wasn't taking notes, and I don't want to misquote what he had to say. But he's right. And I've been saying this for the longest time. Go read my articles. And for those of you that are hearing my program, I hope you like what you're hearing. I hope this is helpful because I know this is the information you're not going to get probably anywhere else. That's what this program is all about. Share it with your friends. Share it with your neighbors, especially the people who disagree with you. We need to have the disagreements and the discussions and the debates. And when people disagree with us, they're not the enemy. They're Americans who need persuading. They are our allies. They just don't know it yet. Another point. Immigration has nothing to do with gay rights or abortion or school prayer and all those other issues that get everybody excited. And we don't have to agree with each other on those other issues. If we lose our country, God forbid, the other issues will be like the deck furniture on the Titanic. Who cares? We're trying to survive. And I can tell you that there is a senior special agent of the Immigration Service, and I will be writing about it. And her name is Taylor Johnson. She testified about the EB-5 visas. EB-5 visas, for those of you not familiar, are investor visas. You come up with $500,000, you claim you're going to hire a certain number of people, and we give you a green card. There has been so much fraud in this program. ABC News did a series of very good reports about this. And this young lady came forward, and according to Breitbart and elsewhere, apparently a law firm representing a company in Las Vegas was involved with this kind of business. The attorney is the son of none less than Harry Reid. And she was told to end the investigation, and when she didn't, she was given again, the allegation is she was transferred to the middle of nowhere. They stripped her of her gun and her badge. They went after her. She testified before Congress about this. Well, the report that I've seen most recently was that 4 days ago she was fired. This is outrageous. Now, is it because of Harry Reid? I have no idea, but that's what Breitbart had to say. And I'll be doing some digging and some hard looking at this stuff. But is this the way our country should be conducting business? conducting witch hunts against agents who come forward and try to do a diligent job. You know, when people say to me, oh, government employees. No, folks, you're getting it wrong. Yeah, there are some bad employees in every area. But there's a wonderful Yiddish expression that says that when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. When Obama can order Border Patrol agents to not arrest illegal aliens if they claim they've been here since January of 2014 or earlier, that's insanity. When Border Patrol agents, and this was what the head of the Border Patrol Union had to say at a hearing, by the way, when the Border Patrol is told that you will not arrest an alien for illegally entering the United States unless the alien does so in your presence, that's insanity. Illegal entry is what is known as a continuing offense. See, generally, when a crime is committed, you have to send the person back to the jurisdiction where the crime was committed. If there's a bank robbery, if there's a shooting, the criminal is sent to that jurisdiction because that's the venue where the crime was committed. Immigration law is very clear. Anybody who runs our borders is committing a continuing offense, and your presence in the United States, no matter where you are located, is where you can be prosecuted. In fact, in the law, it talks about venue and says where found. So once again, we have Obama doing his thing. You have Bernie Sanders and Hillary arguing over the issue with each other. Who would be a truer believer of this betrayal of America and Americans? It's nuts. You know, when you run out of food, you don't bring in more guests. You don't bring sand to the beach. We have such an extreme shortage of jobs, and yet Sanders and Hillary want to bring in more workers at a time when we don't know what to do with 94 million Americans. We live in a very dangerous world. Please have conversations with your family, with your friends. Please get them involved. You know, I always make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. I was watching TV yesterday. I think it was Megyn Kelly. And the actor Richard Dreyfuss came on with his son Harry Dreyfuss. And he said that he was attacked verbally on the internet because he went to a Ted Cruz rally. Pardon me, not necessarily because he's going to support Ted Cruz. He wanted to know what Cruz had to say. I've always considered myself something of a liberal. I thought that liberals were people who were liberal in the idea of acceptance of others. These people are not liberal. They're not Democrats. I think they're Martians. I don't know where they're from. But to his credit, Dreyfuss came on to expose what was going on. This is America. And that First Amendment not only talks about freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of press, but about the right for peaceable assemblage and the right to seek redress of grievances. Why peaceable assemblage? Because the democratic process that we so value in this wonderful republic of ours requires debate, discourse, and on occasion, argument. All the founding fathers basically said was, keep your guns, your clubs, and your knives out of the conversation. We need to take our country back, and we need to remember that what we are dealing with is not political correctness, but Orwellian and newspeak. It's up to all of us to do our job. It's up to all of us to get the politicians accountable and to wake up as many of our fellow Americans as possible. America stands at crossroads. Many challenges, many threats confronting us. We may not have any do-overs after this election. Please pay attention. Please take your citizenship seriously. And remember that in this government, in this country, the title citizen is the highest position. Let's live up to it. Once again, I thank you for spending an hour with me. I hope you like the program. Please go to my websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract, and I wish you all happy Valentine's Day. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.